Good morning, everybody, and welcome to episode 18. No, sorry, start again. It's episode 16. I've just been told the right episode and I've got it wrong already. Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to episode 16 of our live monthly Q&A with Sinton's Wills Trust and Estates team. And this is your February 2024 edition. I'm David Pritchard, Head of Marketing at Sinton's, joined by our speaker today. Welcome him back again, Edward Pattinson, who is a trainee solicitor in the Wills Trust and Estates team here at Sinton's, and his details and a lovely face are on the screen there this very, very wet Friday morning in Newcastle. Same format as with all the previous sessions, three questions that you've sent through over the course of the last month that we're going to answer for you this morning. Thank you for the amount of people that are tuning in live. We've got a record number of people online this morning watching this, so hope they don't mind too much that I didn't know what episode I was on, so please forgive me for that. So anyway, without any further ado, I'm going to pass you straight over to Edward. Ed, good morning, over to you.
Yeah, thanks, David. Yeah, so happy Friday, everyone. Yeah, as David said, bit dull and miserable outside, but it's still the weekend, so it's supposed to be all right tomorrow, so there you go. Might as well crack on in the meantime, answer some of your questions. So first off, we've got, can you give an overview of what type of specific gifts I can make in my will? So, yes, there's quite a few different types of gifts you can make in your will. So I'll lay a few of them out. The first is specific gifts. So as in the title, you can expect it's a gift of a specific item or a specific piece of land which you own. Just to give an example of this, say you've got a Rolex and you want to give it to your son, then you could say in your will that I give my silver Rolex to my son. Quite straightforward, but as you can tell, it's quite a specific description. If you don't own that Rolex when you pass away, then the gift will fail, and the person that you're gifting it to, in this case being your son, you'd get nothing in place of that Rolex, unless your will provided for a substitution. So just bear that in mind. If you are gifting anything away that's specific, just be wary that you'll need to keep hold of it and actually have it when you pass away. Okay. You've also got general gifts. So these, simply put, they're just gifts corresponding to a description. So just to give you another example, just to lay this out, you could put in your will that you give 100 shares in Apple to your daughter, for example. So if you don't own that general gift when you pass away, then it must be obtained using funds from your estate. So again, in this sort of scenario, you pass away, you haven't got these 100 shares in Apple, then they have to be purchased. So again, you know, executors, etc., would have to go out and get those shares just to satisfy that gift. What's also important to note as well in general is if there isn't enough assets in your estate to pay all your debts and all your expenses in full, and also your gifts, then the gifts will be reduced proportionately. So first of all, they reduce the general gifts, and then if only they are insufficient, then the specific gifts will be taken. We've also got demonstrative gifts. So this is a gift which is, it's general in nature, but you're directing it to be paid from a specific fund. So in this scenario, you're saying, I'm giving this gift, but it has to come from this place. So again, just to give you an example of that, you could say that you're giving £1,000 from your HSBC account to your niece, for example. So you're giving away £1,000, but it has to come from that account. It can't come from anywhere else. So if that HSBC account exists when you die and it contains, you know, that £1,000 or more, then the gift is paid. So that's all well and good. That's what you want it to do. But if that account doesn't exist, or it does exist, but it doesn't contain that £1,000 you're wanting to give away, then the gift will be paid from the rest of your estate. Okay. And then finally, we've got pecuniary gifts. These are pretty straightforward. Basically, they're just gifts of cash. So it's just simply a gift of money, doesn't have to come from a specific place like I've just talked about before. So you could just say, I give £20,000 to my cousin or something like that. And then that's just taken from your estate. So all in all, I'd say there's a few different types of gifts you can make, and it's up to you. It's your preference what type of gifts you make. If you want to make sure your Rolex watch gets where it wants to go, you know, you want to make sure it goes to your son, then you can do that. That's fine. Or if you want to make sure that your cousin gets his 20 grand, you know, he might be your favorite cousin or something, then you can do that as well. And this just affects the wording that you'd put in your will. Okay. So I hope that's useful. We've also got question two. So second question is, I've heard I can gift a certain amount each year and it won't attract inheritance tax. Is this true? So this is true. You're on the right lines. You can make gifts up to £3,000 each year tax-free. So this is called the annual exemption. So say, for example, you decided to give your daughter £2,000 to put towards her new car that she's getting, then this wouldn't attract inheritance tax as it's within that exemption. A good thing to note as well is that you can carry any unused annual exemption to the following year. So to use this example again, you've made this gift of £2,000 for your daughter's new car in year one. Now in year two, you can give away £4,000 because you're using your £3,000 example, annual exemption from last year, and then you've got £1,000 from the previous year, from year one. The key thing is, though, you can't just keep carrying it on and building it and building it up. It doesn't work like that. You need to use it. So if you didn't use that £1,000 from year one, then it's lost, and then you just can't use it and you can't carry it any further forward. So just bear that in mind. You know, you can't keep compounding it, so to speak. Whilst we're on this question as well, it's always good to bring up the 7-year gift rule. So there's a rule with gifting within 7 years prior to your death. So if you make a gift above the annual exemption within 7 years of your death, then it's fed back into your estate for inheritance tax purposes. And the rule is basically there to stop people from basically, they'll know that they're gonna die quite soon, and they'll start gifting out of their estate because they know they've got inheritance tax to pay. So they'll start just gifting to anyone in huge amounts. The rule is there to essentially stop that from happening. But the good point to note is, if you make the gift and you survive 7 years, then it's all good, because then the gift would not be included in your estate. So when you make a gift that's substantial, you need to survive 7 years, and then it's, you know, it's wiped off the slate. So I'd say my advice here as well is that if you are potentially facing a large inheritance tax bill and you've got a lot of cash to give away that you don't need anymore, then gifting it to people is one of your options. But it is one option amongst many. So just make sure to speak to a solicitor and just, you know, have a bit of a think of what reliefs you can make use of. You know, it's not one size fits all. Okay. We've got our final question as well. So final question is, my wife and I hold our property as joint tenants. How will the property be handled if one of us dies? So yes, holding a property as joint tenants, it means you hold the property jointly, as in the name, and you don't have your own separate halves, okay? It means if you or your wife were to sadly die, then the deceased person's share would immediately go to the survivor. And all the survivor would need to prove, all they'd need to produce to prove absolute ownership is the death certificate. So you don't need a grant of representation in that case. So in that way, it is quite good, because you can, you know, you can try to avoid the costs and delays that come with getting grants at the minute. The thing to be mindful of, though, is that you can't prevent your property passing automatically by anything said in your will. So the joint tenancy trumps the will every time. So just bear that in mind. So say, for example, you say in your will that you want half of the property to go to your daughter, for example. Then if you held the property's joint tenants, it just wouldn't stand because, as I said before, joint tenancy would trump the will in that situation. On the other hand, though, if you held the property's tenants in common, and what this means is that you both own your own separate share of the property, then you can leave your share to someone other than the survivor. And this is because you both own your separate shares in the property and you can do whatever you like with them. And the only downside here, and as I've just discussed about getting the grant, is if you hold the property as tenants in common, you would need that grant and you would need it to deal with the property when one of you dies. So just bear that in mind, you know, with the grant, there's going to be costs and a bit of delay involved. That being said, because I know you said you hold the property as joint tenants, if you do like the sound of holding the property as tenants in common, then you can sever your joint tenancy if you want to. So you're not bound to hold the property's joint tenants forever. You know, you can sever the tenancy if you want to. So this would mean when you sever the tenancy, you would turn from holding it as joint tenants to tenants in common. And I definitely encourage you to just have a think about that. Just have a think about how you should hold your property if circumstances change. So say, for example, you might be going for a separation. One of you might sadly lose capacity to make decisions by themselves. And these are all situations where you might just want to take a step back and just consider whether it's better to hold the property as tenants in common and just own your own shares for that instance. And as I say, if you can sever your joint tenancy, that's all fine. And a solicitor can do that for you and it should be quite straightforward. And then once you sever the tenancy, just draft a will to reflect that change. So you could say, for example, in your new will, I give my share of the property, you know, your half of the property, to your daughter, for example. So there's a bit of consideration there. I would just have a look into it and just consider what type of ownership might be best and what will work for you and your wills, and just keep an eye on things as they change. And as I say, you do hold it as joint tenants for now, but you're not bound to hold that forever. You know, it's up to you. You can sever it if you need to. Okay. So that concludes all the questions for this month. So I'll pass you over to David.
Thanks very much. Enjoyed listening to that one. As always, very quickly for me, we continue to work hard to produce, release and deliver useful and relevant content, articles, podcasts, blogs, all of which can be found on our website, www.sintons.co.uk, should you wish to take a look. And that includes all 16, and that's 16 episodes of this live Q&A with Sintons Wills Trust and Estates team. I popped Edward's details back on the screen there for people who are listening to this via podcast. He can be contacted via telephone 01912267855 7855 and via email edward.paddinson@sintons.co.uk. And that's in case you'd like to get in touch with anything that's been raised today or indeed in any of the sessions. If you haven't heard enough from us by that point, you can also follow the team on Twitter at Sintons Law and at Sintons PC. That's it from us. We will speak to you next month in March on the second working Friday of March, live at 10 a.m. on Teams. As I said at the outset, just thank you once again for the amount of people that are continuing to tune into these sessions, to watch them and listen to them afterwards via podcast, and to continue to send in your questions. We have quite the log of questions, and we're doing everything we can to get to those as quickly as possible. So thank you once again. We're really pleased. This is continuing to add value to you, and we will see you in March. Stay safe, everyone. Thank you.